All right, so today is Thursday, September 26. We're going to start on page 63 in our course packs. That is the start of Chapter 6, Skeletal System Information. So let's first talk about the five major functions of your skeletal system. The first thing there is to provide support. So could you imagine a body without bones? What's that? We would be like jellyfish, yeah. Try to get to your refrigerator and you would have to slither and slide there, kind of like a jellyfish or a snail, you're right. There's very important good reason that we have those bones, and that is to provide movement. And of course, movement's not till number 3 on our list, but bones and muscles actually work together to provide the support, the movement that we need to be able to function. Number 2, bones do provide protection for our vital organs. In lab, you probably learned those body cavities. Which body cavity includes your brain and your spinal cord?
Dorsal.
Dorsal, good. And the brain is housed in a cranial cavity. What about that spinal cord? Vertebral, good. So there's two great examples of where bones provide protection for organs. Let's talk about the ventral body cavity. Which particular subsection provides protection to your heart and lungs? Thoracic, yeah, with the ribs, good. So we know that the pelvic cavity, part of that abdominopelvic cavity, doesn't have a lot of great bony protection, but there's a little bit that comes from the hips and from the lower ribs. But we've got 3 of the 4 main body cavities protected by a bony, you know, enclosure. So we actually did number 3. Movement is not just bones. What else has to work in conjunction with bones to provide movement? Muscles, right. What type of muscle provides movement of your body? Skeletal, good. Is skeletal striated or non-striated? It's striated, good. Of course, it's voluntary. Interesting thing, they back in the day, this is many years ago, when they had the space shuttles and they orbited Earth, they would oftentimes pull those astronauts off the space shuttles after they'd been up there for like 2 weeks, and they would put them on a stretcher. And I think that might have given people the wrong connotation that space made people sick. No, it's zero gravity. It just makes you what? Makes you weak, yeah. So when muscles are not pulling on the bones to provide movement, not only do muscles weaken, but also bones will weaken. That's why a sedentary lifestyle where we're not moving very much actually not only causes weak muscles, but weak bones. So they're both in cahoots together in terms of providing movement, and they support each other in that way, keeping them strong. What do bones store?
Calcium,
good. Any other minerals?
Phosphorus,
good. So great storehouse for calcium and phosphorus. What is the name of the hormone produced by your skin's exposure to sunlight that helps regulate calcium and phosphorus? Calcitriol, and its real plain and simple name is D3. Yep, so D3 is calcitriol. So in addition to minerals like, say, calcium and phosphorus, the inside of our bones are actually hollow, and in there is some tissue that stores fat. So if we are talking about, fatty tissue in our bones, it's actually called yellow marrow, but we oftentimes have red marrow in the hollow spaces of our bones. So it just depends on what we're doing there. In terms of storage fat, it's yellow. If we're making blood cells, it's going to be red in nature. And that actually takes us down here to number 5 on our list. Blood cell formation is a major function of your bones. So what color marrow makes blood cells? Red. Good. So as kids, we have a lot of red marrow in our long bones, like those of our femur, for instance. But as we get older, as we emerge out of our teenage years and get into our 20s, we actually see more of that red marrow be populated in places like your hips, your sternum, even your vertebrae are places where we make red blood cells. So, when they take a marrow sample, they try to catch some bones closest to the skin surface, and that oftentimes may be, those ileum of your hip bones. All right, So those are our five major functions. Any questions about those? So our next is six different bone shapes. I'll give y'all a moment to jot these down. So we're going to start with long bones, and they're really easy because they're just long, right? And if you're thinking about your body, are they mostly found in your axial or your appendicular skeleton?
Appendicular,
right. Those are the appendages. So if you look at your arms, we've got, you know, humerus in the forearm here. What are the two bones?
Radius
and ulna. Good. And even in our hand, these bones in the palm of your hand are called what? Metacarpals, and of course the fingers have long bones. They are phalanges. Good. You drive your car with carpals, right? Okay. And then we get down to the leg, and you've got the humerus, you've got lower leg, tibia and fibula, good. And of course in the foot area we have metatarsals, which make up the sole of your foot, and then of course toes again are called phalanges, right? And so I'm a tar heel, and so tarsals, T, of course, keeps me straight. T for toes is another way to remember those T's in the foot. So these are good long bone examples. They have a similar structure. They have a shaft, which makes up the length of the bone. And of course, there are ends there where those bones articulate with other bones. We're going to come back to this in just a little bit, and we're going to talk more in detail, so I'll save the details for later. Where would you find short bones? In the wrist, yeah, that's one good place. Those carpals are short bones. Where else?
Ankles,
yeah. So those tarsals in the foot and ankle area, those, of course, are short bones. I do want to mention that all bones on the outside are covered with a very smooth layer of bone. And on the inside, these short bones actually have a layer of spongy tissue. So you can see that in this picture here. Speaking of flat bones, they're next. We actually don't have anything that's truly flat in our body, but we have things that are somewhat flat and curved, and that's why we get them the name flat bones. In terms of flat bones, how about in the thoracic area? What's flat here? The ribs, yeah. The ribs are actually flat, and the skull bones are actually flat. And I know you're thinking, wait a minute, you know, we're to learn English, right? Flat bones should be flat like a book. But if you were to crack open a skull bone or a rib bone, they'd be made just like a sandwich. They'd have that really nice, smooth, compact bone on the outside. And what's on the inside? Spongy bone, yeah. So that's why we classify them as flat bones. They're made just like a sandwich. Compact on the outside, spongy on the inside. And they're usually flat but curved. So, you know, we've kind of gotten to the point where we don't know what to do with some of these bones. They're jumped into a category that we just simply call irregular. And I know that one of you mentioned scapula has some flat appearance to it, but the rest of it's weird looking, right? So we're just going to put that one in the irregular category. It doesn't really fit the shape of a long, a short, or a flat bone. So it goes into irregular. What else should we put there? All the vertebrae, yeah, whole entire spine. Let's put that in the irregular category. Anything else in the head go in the irregular category? Yeah, mandible, it's irregular.
Wow.
Hyoid, which is up underneath, you know, that one's the irregular. Oh, let's see. That probably covers most of those irregular bones. What is left actually fits into one of these last two categories. You know, they say that we have 206 bones, but I guarantee if we were to x-ray every one of us in here, we would have a different number from each other. When we're born, we actually have more bones. Those bones tend to fuse throughout childhood and our teenage years. That's one reason that we have more bones when we're born, but as we age, we actually have different numbers of sutural bones in our skull and these sesamoid bones in our joints. So if you were to count those sutural bones as individual bones, then yeah, 206 would be just an average number that we have. These are kind of cool. When you're born, you have this soft spot on top of your head, right? And when you're by 1 or 2 years old, that tends to fuse up and become hard tissue. Well, what you've got here are collagen fibers that knit together, and depending on, I'm going to pull that out again. Depending on how these things fit together, you may end up having multiple bones between the sutures. So what is the name of the suture that runs literally down the top of your skull between parietal bones?
Sagittal.
Yeah, so look at all these bones here in that sagittal suture. Moving back to the back of the head, what suture divides like a Y shape? Lambdoidal, right. So there's a ton of sutural bones in this person's head there. All right, and then up here where you've got this suture running across, it's called coronal, right? And you've got like, you know, a bunch of bones situated in that one as well. So this person probably has more than the average number of sutural bones embedded in those sutures. And these are cool. These are called sesamoid bones. In Bio 110, they probably grouped your patella as a short bone, but now we're going to talk a little more in detail about a special short bone called a sesamoid bone. So your patella is actually a bone that's embedded in ligaments. You're going to learn those ligaments a little later on. So these little bones here may be like your patella, but they're elsewhere in other joints. The only way you're going to know you've got them is if you were to have an x-ray and see them there, but they may grow over a lifetime and be present in the ligaments around those joints. So yet another reason that we would have an average of 206. I did want to mention that babies aren't born with kneecaps. They are grown during the first year of life, and not everybody has a kneecap. You know, most of us do, but not everybody does. There are rare anomalies where people don't have a kneecap. So interesting that that is actually a special short bone called a sesamoid bone. All right, so any questions about that page? Okay. Page 64 is just a practice page on those bones, and we'll flip on over to page 65. So as promised, we're going to take a look at long bone anatomy a little more in detail. So all long bones have the same basic shape. I know that some of you all expressed an interest in going into radiology. And if somebody comes in with a broken bone in the shaft, then you may not want to have to say, well, the break is in the linea aspera of the femur, right? That gets a little tedious. You may simply have heard that the break is in the diaphysis. So the diaphysis is a fancy word for what part of that long bone? It is the shaft of the long bone, right? So this shaft or diaphysis is number one's blank. These bones are actually made up of compact in the shaft area on the outside. I'm going to pass a bone around for y'all. This is actually a real human bone. We used to use these in lab, but they're very brittle, and you can see with just a little wear and tear, they tend to fall apart. You can feel the shaft here. It's very smooth. That's compact bone. If you were to break this open, it would actually be hollow on the inside with a marrow cavity. So if you feel toward the end here very gently, there's an exposed spongy bone. That's inside. It never should be exposed like this because it would poke you, right? So you want to have it covered with some compact bone on the outside. So Very lightweight. I think you'll be surprised how lightweight these things are compared to what you've got in lab in terms of those plastic bones. That's a real bone, yeah. So they used to, you know, harvest like cadavers and get those out. Sometimes I've even heard that they used to get them from mass graves, but that was way long in the past. These are probably harvested from cadavers.
Graves.
Way long time ago. Yep. Before any of us were ever here, so.
That might be one of our prisoners.
All right, so inside your long bone, you have a marrow cavity. It is sometimes called a medullary cavity. And that cavity may house yellow marrow. It may have red marrow if you're a child, but older people, you know, once you've reached adulthood, that transitions in most cases to a yellow marrow storage space. That is just a fancy type of adipose tissue that stores fat. This is not fat that you have to lose. This is just fat that used to be that red marrow. There is a type of tissue that lines the inside of your marrow cavity. It is a single layer of squamous tissue, and it's called the endosteum. So you'll notice that term is bolded there for 1B. Endosteum is the lining inside of your long bone's marrow cavity. Let me help you out with the verbiage there. End, E-N-D, that prefix, tells what? Inside or within. And the O-S-T is what?
Bone.
Bone, right. So end ostium literally tells you it's a layer inside the bone. The number two blank is periosteum. The number two blank is periosteum. And again, let's use those prefixes to help us. What does peri tell us? Around. Yeah, and it's literally a covering of tissue outside the bone around the diaphysis. You don't want to eat with me ever because I dissect my food at the table, right? You know? So if you ever are eating chicken and you have chicken with bone in it, especially like a chicken leg, if you scrape your fingernail against that chicken leg bone, I know now you're like, oh no, I'm not eating chicken legs anymore, right? You might be able to peel up some of that periosteum on the outside surface. It is not meant to be separated from the underlying bone because those, you know, tendons that attach to our bones actually attach through that periosteum. And you don't want to be picking up a 50-pound box or anything heavy and have the bone and the muscle separate. So we are not looking for those two, the periosteum and the underlying bone, from ever separating. In fact, if you were to think about the way that those two are held together, the periosteum is anchored just like, you know, an adhesive, just like shrink wrap to that underlying tissue. You'll notice a term there on your page called perforating or Sharpie's fibers. And so those fibers are what helps to anchor the periosteum to the underlying bone. Probably the best way I can describe Sharpie's fibers for you is if you've walked through a parking lot on a hot summer day and accidentally stepped on chewing gum, when you pull your shoe up off the pavement, you see these strings, right? All that chewing gum. So that, of course, is Sharpie's fibers. That's how it attaches to your underlying bone tissue. It is incredibly hard to get chewing gum off your shoe. Same thing. You're not going to separate periosteum from underlying diaphysis bone. That periosteum is actually the place where we have bone growth. You know, when we're born, our bones are certainly not this big. They're not this long. They're not this wide. So this periosteum that was on this bone has probably been worn off through handling, but the cells that were around the outside were the ones that helped the bone grow. So the bone-forming cells, what should they be called? Blast, yes, an osteoblast would be the ones that form the bone. You've also got clasts out there. What is their job?
Break down
bone. Good. So, you know, if we're sedentary, we're not moving and not making those bones support us, then bone may actually be broken down if it's not being used. Number three, these are the ends of the bones. They are called the epiphysis, plural. They are the epiphyses of the bones. All right, what does the prefix epi tell us?
Above.
Above, good. So it's above the diaphysis. There are two epiphyses for each of your long bones. If we take that femur, for instance, which portion should attach to your hip? The head, good. That head should attach to the hip. Of course, this one is distal because it's, proximal because it's closer to the point of attachment. This portion is closest to your knee. That's going to be our distal epiphysis. So we finally get to use those directional terms, proximal and distal. All right, number four is articular cartilage. So I want to be, clear about the name here. This is not yet a different type of cartilage. This is just a descriptor for where the cartilage is located. Because the cartilage is found on the ends of your long bone, we are calling it articular, because articulate means to joint. So this is technically joint cartilage. You know, in most of our long bones, that articular cartilage is made up of hyaline cartilage. The knee, however, is made up of a different kind of cartilage. Do you recall what type? Fibro, good. So most articular cartilage is hyaline in nature. And again, to not make you sick, but if you've ever looked at chicken, the white stuff on the ends of raw chicken is cartilage. And if you've cooked the chicken, that what we often call gristle, that's the cartilage that's been cooked. I know some people eat that. It's just like taking chondroitin, from what I understand. I know, it just doesn't feel right in my mouth. And just to prove the point that articular cartilage is hyaline in nature in most cases, look at this picture. This pretty blue covering on the outside of the epiphysis is, of course, hyaline. And there is an epiphyseal plate. It, too, is made up of hyaline cartilage. So nice, pretty part of that bone. Speaking of, number five is epiphyseal plate. Number five is epiphyseal plate. An easy way to remember this. This is a growth plate. Okay, so when we're young and growing, this growth plate has to be actively dividing. It is made up of hyaline cartilage, and as long as it's hyaline cartilage, your bones can grow longer. If, however, it ever turns to bone, and it will, which happens in your mid to late teenage years, then we no longer have a plate. We have number six on your page. It's called an epiphyseal line. So epiphyseal line is number six. So in these pictures, you can see the spongy bone of the epiphysis. You can see the epiphyseal plate made up of hyaline cartilage, a really tight layer there of hyaline cartilage. And then down this way, we would be heading toward the diaphysis of the bone. So pretty cool that is a pretty distinct layer of hyaline cartilage. And those cells are actually dividing in a growing bone. You can almost see the layers of dividing cells there in that particular plate. In an x-ray, you can also see an epiphyseal plate. It shows up as a dark line because that bone has not yet turned into calcified bone. In other words, we say it has not yet ossified. And then here's a fracture in one of those plates. What do you think happens to bone growth if you fracture a plate?
Stop.
It could stop, yeah. Yep, so kids who, for any reason break a bone that happens to impact that epiphyseal plate may have to be monitored, because what may happen to the bones as they grow? Could be disformed, could be crooked. One leg, not strong enough. One leg could be shorter than the other. So one arm could be shorter, you're right. Did you break a bone? Interesting. Which is it markedly shorter?
I just see you put my hand.
Yeah. Yeah, but you could have shorter limbs there if one of those plates is broken. When kids are suspected of having growth problems, they will x-ray the hands because that provides the least amount of radiation to the body. But the secret held in the hands is those epiphyseal plates. On the left, you're going to see a lot of space between those bones. Each long bone should have some space. Even the carpals have room to grow. And that tells us that there's still some active growing that can be taking place. What that tells us is that child probably still has some height to add to their body. But this one on the right, these epiphyseal lines, I don't see the space at the ends of the bones anymore. So what do you tell this kid?
You're out of luck.
Out of luck. Yeah, you're done, right? So whatever height you are, that's the height you are. So that's interesting to be able to compare the epiphyseal plates to having them no longer exist. So just for fun, how about this picture? On the left, what do you think we've got? It's a line, right? So is that cartilage or is that bone? It's bone, yeah. And so how old is probably that person? At least 21, 22. And the person on the right is, they do have epiphyseal plates, and they're under what age?
Under
21, yes. Yeah. So they're probably still somewhat in their teenage years, still able to grow.
I'm not understanding. This one over here, that looks like it has a line, like separating where the line is for the question mark. This is the adult, I mean, this is the younger person.
Right.
And this one is the
older person.
Older person, mm-hmm. Because there is no line.
That's correct.
It's almost like a suture, almost.
It is. And in fact, we're going to learn in the next chapter that that is a joint. Because there is a very tiny degree of flex that can take place at that joint. Not much, but, and the reason it shows up looking like it does is because it's basically a layer of cartilage through there, so that's why it looks funky in one of those plate pictures. All right, how about any questions on those terms? Do you feel good about those terms? Right, there's a picture at the bottom of the page for you. It is pre-labeled with letters from the top. That's a good practice picture. There is one like that on the test.
Which one is on the test?
Bottom of page 65. All right, so now we're going to talk about bone tissue again. This is a great review because I know you've already talked about bone tissue in lab. We're just going to come back and repeat that stuff one more time. There are actually two types of bone tissue. In our previous chapter, we only talked about compact bone. Its alternate name is what? Osseous, good. So we're going to talk about osseous tissue or compact bone once again. We're also going to talk about spongy bone. This really cool picture here shows you that compact bone is always on the outside surface. It is smooth. It's not going to poke you. This spongy bone inside is actually needle-like, and I hope you had a chance to feel that bone going around. It's very needle-like compared to that smooth, dense, homogeneous compact bone on the outside surface. All right, so let's hit number one. On your page there, osteocytes are mature bone cells. Are they living or dead?
Alive.
They're alive. So to kind of give you an analogy as to how they're trapped in the bone tissue, imagine that you by yourself were building a house, and you built your closet, and you put up the walls, and the next thing you know, you've now walled yourself in, and you're stuck in your house, and people say, it's okay, we'll bring you food. They didn't bother to get you out, you know. They're saying, we'll bring you food, and we'll bring you a little potty so that you can go to the bathroom, but you're staying there. And that's what happens to osteocytes. They were building the bone, just like we were building a house, and they trap themselves in the house, and they say, well, I'm stuck now. Just help me out. So blood vessels carry nutrients to the osteocytes, and they carry away the waste products. But that's where they live their days, is trapped in bone tissue. So they're not building anymore. They're not breaking down bone. They're just helping, you know, deposit calcium, or not deposit calcium, but helping to transport items, you know, through that bone tissue as needed. All right, so they are trapped in a little air pocket called a lacuna. I think we've talked about that word before. That lacuna houses both osteocytes and what else? Chondrocytes. Yep, so both chondrocytes and osteocytes can have a lacuna or an air pocket. I know you've seen this picture before in bone tissue. You'll notice these dark spots are, in fact, those osteocytes. They're trapped there. All right, let's talk about number two. The matrix of bone tissue is calcium salt. That's our blank, the matrix. So this bone tissue is set up in ring structure. These rings are made up of calcium salt layers. They are built there by osteoblast, and then like we talked, the osteoblasts get walled in and they become osteo what? Osteocytes. So when you're looking at this picture, these rings that go around this hole in the middle, these are layers and layers of calcium salts that were deposited there by osteoblast. Okay, so calcium salts are the main component of the matrix. You don't normally have calcium in your body. You have to consume it. And what kind of foods are a good source of calcium?
Dairy.
Dairy, yep. Some green leafy vegetables have some calcium in there.
Collards.
Cabbage, yeah. Kale, things like that. So you have to eat your calcium, and then your body takes any excess and puts it here in these ring structures in your bones. These layers, by the way, have a special name. On your worksheet, you'll notice lamellae. And that's just a fancy name for the layers or the rings that surround this hole. Yeah, if you were to talk about if I said to you that we have layers of rings that go around that hole, then you would say they're called lamellae. So I could actually peel off layer by layer and get down to that hole. So each ring that we deposit is more strength, and you would just say collectively they're the lamellae. So I want to talk to you a little more about what's in that bone matrix. We know that calcium salt is a major component of the bone matrix. Calcium salt is meant to provide the strength to your bone. And you'll notice on your worksheet there, that makes up 2/3 of your bone's weight. And that wasn't a very heavy bone, but nonetheless, 2/3 of your bone weight comes from that calcium in your bones. You'll notice a term there, if you read along, called hydroxyapatite. That also includes other ions like sodium, magnesium, even fluorine that help to give your bones strength. All right, so what makes up 1/3 of your bone's mass? Collagen, good. So what does collagen provide for bone tissue?
Flexibility.
Okay, so let me explain how these two things, calcium salts and collagen fibers, have to both be there together. So if you think about, let's see some chalk from the board up here. So if you were to imagine that this was calcium, all you have to do is step on this, right, and it crumbles. There's not a lot of flexibility to something like a piece of chalk. I can't really bend this without it breaking. So if your bone was just calcium salt, it would be just like a piece of chalk. It would be brittle, it would not be flexible, and it would crumble and break. So we don't want just calcium salt by itself. When you mix in the collagen fibers, that flexibility is what gives our bones a little bit of sway. They can bend a little bit, and they're no longer as brittle. So you've got to have the two mixed together. The collagen fibers provide the flexibility. They also provide some strength. But the calcium salt is what provides the hardness of that bone. So those two have to work together. Let's play what if. What if you had bones that had collagen problems? How do you think that person's bones would behave? They'd break a lot, right? So we actually have, you know, classified diseases where there are collagen deficiencies. And when there's collagen deficiency, those bones are not as strong and flexible, that's the key there, as they should be. So calcium salts, hydroxyapatite is most of your bone, about two-thirds. Collagen fibers make up around one-third of the bone. And what is the remaining last little bit? Bone cells. Yeah, so bone cells like osteoclasts, osteoblasts, and osteocytes make up a very small percentage. So most of it's calcium salt and hydroxyapatite crystals. So with bone being a hard substance, we have to figure out a way to keep those cells alive. And we have a lot of canals in our bones to help provide nourishment to those bone cells. So the first type of canal that we're going to talk about is a teeny tiny canal called a canaliculi. And if you forget how to say it, it's literally canaliculi, kind of a funky name. So when you look at bone tissue, the little tiny lines that radiate out from an osteocyte are in fact the canaliculi in that bone, and they help connect that osteocyte back to a central canal. These little teeny tiny canals help to transport blood and nutrients and oxygen to those osteocytes. So when you look at this picture, you probably recognize these dark spots as osteocytes. These lines that radiate out, these are great examples of canaliculi. So before, we might not have paid them any attention, but now we know their function is to transport blood from this central canal here out to all of these osteocytes. They've got to receive their nourishment, and we have to carry away their waste products. Do you see the canaliculi here? Yeah, it looks stringy. So here's a central canal. These are osteocytes, and it looks like little stringy waves coming out from the center toward those osteocytes. Those are the canaliculi. You can even see the rings here. Those rings were called what? Lamellae. Good. Well, we've actually covered the second canal. That hole in the center of these rings has a name. It's called what? Central canal. Good. Its alternate name? Haversian canal. What do you find in that canal? Blood vessels. Good. Sometimes nerves. And so these canals, these haversian or central canals, run the length of your bone. So in that femur there, they're running lengthwise the length of that bone. Every now and again in a bone picture, you're going to see central canals connected together. And you can see a central canal here. There's a lot of them in this picture. There's several there. And it looks like there might have been one sitting about here. And you see this strange line between the two central canals. That is our third type of connecting canal in bone. That one is called what type? Perforating, yeah. So that is a perforating canal. And these actually help to connect adjacent central canals. Okay, so in this picture, the dark spots are our osteocytes. These larger holes here are central canals. And then you've got two central canals here connected by a perforating canal, alternately called a Volkmann's canal. So let me explain this again, but let's talk about a hotel instead. So if you happen to be staying on the 23rd floor of a really nice, tall hotel, you probably are not taking the steps. You probably get on and take one of these elevators and you ride up in your elevator. What kind of canal is going to travel up like you've got here?
Central canal.
Yeah, that's the central canal. Let's say that you're getting off on your 23rd floor and you're now going to walk to your room. this particular hallway is perforating your Volkmann's canal. And as you head to your osteocyte, which is your room, you take a little tiny corridor. It's called canaliculi. Yep. So when you get off those, you know, adjacent hallways, you walk from a central canal, you know, down the hallway to Volkmann's canal, and then into your room through an canaliculi. Okay. So in this picture here, do you see any central canals? Okay. There's lots of them. And if you think about this bone, these canals are all running the length of the bone, okay? And then these Volkmann's canals, they're connecting adjacent central canals. And the canaliculi are all the little teeny tiny ones, you can't really see them here, that connect your osteocytes together. So very well nourished with blood. I don't want you to think that bone is dead. In a lifetime, they say that our bones actually replenish themselves with new calcium salts and remake themselves an average of 6 times. So they're not static entities. They're very much living and constantly being remodeled and replaced. So that brings us to an osteon. So let me go back here for just a moment. And I left you some space if you would like to jot down how an osteon looks. Start you in the center with a central canal. What is housed in that canal?
Blood.
Yeah, blood vessels, sometimes nerves. And let's just put on some rings. These rings are called what?
Lamellae.
Good. These rings, of course, are made up of calcium salts, and they're made flexible by what fibers? Collagen, good. I'm now going to place some osteocytes. It does, that's what I was thinking too when I was drawing this. And we now need to make some canaliculi. So how should I draw those? Yeah, tiny little waves. They come out from the central canal. And they're carrying blood, nutrients, getting rid of waste products. Hey, this looks like a blood shot off. So what you've just drawn is a unit of bone tissue. This whole thing is called a what? Osteon. Good. And this is commonly seen with ease and compact bone or osseous tissue. And just for fun, if we were to have a neighboring osteon, you could even put a perforating canal there. And what does that perforating canal connect?
Two adjacent
central canals. Good. All right, very bottom of your page, let's talk about spongy bone, alternately called cancellous bone. And this bone is different looking. It's got these bony bars that provide strength, and that bony bar is called a trabecula or trabeculae, and that's your blank. Okay, so bony bars are called trabeculae. You've probably heard of osteoporosis, where bones become more porous and more weak. And when a person has that, these bony bars actually disappear. So instead of having a great network of scaffolds in your spongy bone, there would be just simply less of them. So just like building a building without enough support in it, that's what happens to spongy bone without the support. It becomes more porous, more brittle. It's no longer able to support the body's structure. So, you know, if later in life this happens, then we notice that people's bones just crumble like a building would crumble without the support scaffolding. And unfortunately, that may mean losing height in terms of inches of height. Here's another view of those trabeculae. You can pretty much see, you know, the overall structure with your naked eye by looking at that spongy bone. Bone marrow is housed in these hollow spaces. If it's red in nature, what is happening in that red marrow? Blood cell formation, good. And the fancy name for that is? Hematopoiesis, good. And if it's yellow marrow, then what's happening? Fat storage, good, good. All right, so how about questions? Anything on page 65 or 66 we need to hit again? So let's talk about how bones grow. The process of growing bones and making them hard is called ossification. If we were actually to discuss this from birth, it's called osteogenesis. There are three types of bone growth. We're going to talk about specifically endochondral ossification. I'll just briefly mention appositional and intramembranous, but we're going to focus mostly on endochondral, which makes our bones grow longer. Does anyone need the board? I'm going to erase that. Okay. Okay, so we'll come back and talk about intramembranous and appositional in just a minute. For right now, let's focus on how bones grow from the time a fetus is forming throughout childhood and into adulthood. So the term osteogenesis here literally means the beginning of bone growth, and that happens as soon as a fetus starts to grow its skeletal system. Ossification is the process of making cartilage models, which is how bones begin, into a hardened bone. So we're going to combine both of those processes together. Let me start you with this picture here. In this picture, we're looking at step one of endochondral ossification. You'll notice that when we're talking about a fetus in its mother's womb, we're talking about the skeletal system having to start from scratch. And the way we actually make bones is not by just putting calcium down and forming a structure. We actually start with a model, and that model is made up of cartilage. So that's kind of what you see here in this progress of pictures. We're looking at cartilage cells getting together and forming kind of a basic outline for what the bone is to become. Eventually, you'll notice there, step one, the bone starts to become calcified thanks to the activity of osteoblast. What do blasts do? Build. And so these osteoblasts are depositing calcium into this bone, making it become a harder structure. And blood vessels will grow in, as you can see in the last picture. And now we've got the setup to make this a full-fledged bone. We can add calcium and make the bone grow. So eventually a periosteum forms on what surface of that bone? The outside, yeah. So eventually we've got a periosteum, so we're ready to go. So you can see in these pictures there are blood vessels coming in to nourish that bone. And that allows for this bone to start to lengthen. That is the hallmark sign of endochondral ossification. Bones grow longer when we're, of course, growing up. And they're going to grow longer as long as your bones have an actively dividing layer of cartilage at the ends. It's called an epiphyseal plate. So in this picture, I'm going to take you over here on the far left. You may not notice anything special about the epiphysis, but if you look at this picture, you may start to notice something appear. It's really evident in this picture C. Do you see this layer here on either end? Okay, so this is a baby that's not yet been born. This baby's skeletal system is just being formed. And what happened was there is a bunch of osteoblasts in the center of this cell or this bone. And in these early pictures, they're migrating to each end of your cell or your bone. Okay, so they're coming here from the center and they're migrating down toward either end. You really can't see it too clearly, and then it really starts to become more clear. So those cells that are migrating down there are going to start to help make the bone grow in length. In order for bones to grow in length, you have to have a growth plate. And what is that growth plate made up of? Cartilage, yep. So as long as the growth plate is there and we have osteoblasts sitting right behind them, we can have those bones grow longer. And here you can see a very clear growth plate, and right sitting behind them would be those osteoblast cells. So let me show you this picture. This makes it a little more clear. Let's see, they're pointing out for us cartilage cells undergoing mitosis, and then down below, this looks like totally different tissue. These are osteoblasts that are chasing these chondroblasts and turning it into bone. So let me take you to step two and talk about those terms there in bold. In step two, we started out with a primary ossification center. It was centered literally here in the bone. It migrates toward either epiphysis. So you really can't see it clearly in that first picture. When it migrates toward each epiphysis, that primary ossification center sets up right behind the epiphyseal plates. That's where the bone growth is going to take place. When the chondrocytes die, they're going to be replaced by bone thanks to the activity of osteoblast. Okay, and then we're going to open up a mirror cavity inside, which you can see in these later pictures. This mirror cavity is thanks to the activity of osteoclast and lysosomes. What do lysosomes do to materials in your body? Digest them. Good. Okay, so let me zoom in and talk about what's happening in step three. That step three talks about a secondary ossification center. So we're going to look at the epiphysis of a bone, and we're going to say that this could be a fetus, and the fetus skeleton is growing longer, or we could say this is a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old or maybe even a 15-year-old whose bones are growing longer. We know that that primary ossification center was in the center of your bone, and we know it migrated out here toward the ends of your bone. Both ends of your bone have an ossification center. I'm going to use these blue sticky notes to represent my osteoblasts. They're in the primary ossification center. Whoops. Oh, maybe not. Laura's not going to cooperate. Okay. Oops. Okay, so what kind of cells are found in that secondary ossification center? Osteoblast, yeah. I want to make this look a little different. Sitting right on the other side, that is our epiphyseal plate. And what kind of cells are sitting there? Cartilage cells, good. Have I lost you anywhere so far? Okay, so this is growing bone. This is endochondral ossification, literally meaning inside the bone, we're looking at cartilage providing that bone growth. And of course, we have to have actively dividing plates in order for bones to grow and limb. If you are, you know, looking at epiphyseal lines, it's game over, right? All right, so when we finished up chapter 4, we talked about some types of tissues that grow quickly, and then we also talked about those that grow slowly. Do you remember what category we put cartilage in?
Slow.
Yeah. So no wonder it takes from before birth until maybe age 20 to reach your final height. You know, we don't grow that quickly because that cartilage is slow growing. So these cartilage cells here in the epiphyseal plate are going to divide. And when they divide, they create extra layers. I'm going to put another extra layer on here. And the more layers you add to that epiphyseal plate, what happens to the length of your bone? Yeah, it gets longer. And so, you know, from your entire lifetime, you've got these slow-growing, dividing cartilage cells that are pushing that bone and making it longer. Well, how would your bones behave if you had cartilage in their ends for several inches? They'd be bending. You'd be really wobbly, wouldn't you? So we can't necessarily have several inches of cartilage making up the ends of your bone be soft. So what should we do to that bone?
Fill it in.
Fill it in. So what we're going to do is we're going to come right along behind, and we're going to take these bone-forming cells, and we say, okay, we're going to turn that into hardened, calcified bone. And so your bones, your chondrocytes are up here. They're making new cartilage. And what are these osteoblasts doing behind them?
Building
bone. Yeah, they're doing it like that. And then every time we add another layer of cartilage, I'm out of board space, but we keep making this thing longer and longer. So this is like a slow motion romance. Your osteoblasts are chasing your chondrocytes. And for 15 years of your life, it's a slow motion chase. Your osteoblasts don't catch up with your chondrocytes. But when you hit puberty and you've got sex hormones in your bloodstream, guess who we give the green card to go faster? Osteoblasts. So these poor, slow chondrocytes are up here making this epiphyseal plate grow longer and longer, and sex hormones say, all right, we're catching up with you. There you go. You've turned all of that into bone. So by the time you're, say, around 15 to 18, the bone growth is, you've had a burst of growth, you're slowing down.
Ninth grade.
I was 12 when I stopped growing. And then, you know, some of you may still grow at age 18, but by the time you're 21, you're probably done. So the race is over, and the osteoblast, this ossification center, has run over the chondrocytes. So at that point, you don't have a plate anymore. You have a what?
Bone.
You have a line. Yeah. So that's why, you know, you look at an x-ray, and you see a little faint line going across there. It's probably the last place that you had ossification. So just think of it like a slow motion race. Blast, or trying to catch up with the cartilage, and it should not happen for you until you're somewhat in mid to late teenage years. You may not grow much taller at that point, but the ossification will take place gradually from, you know, 18 to 21. By 25, you're absolutely done with ossification. Does this make sense? Would you like to do it again, or is this okay? You good? Yeah.
They go and put the rebar up and just make us come in and pour around the rebar.
And you can't do the cement before you get the rebar, because then you don't have the structure that you need. Exactly. Yeah. So that's basically what step 3 is. That's what that epiphyseal plate is doing for us. And when we talk about bone growth, that's why it's important that cartilage is still there. If cartilage is no longer there, you've game over, right? You've got a line and you no longer can make those bones grow longer. So this plate is cartilage. You've got an actively dividing set of cells. Your bone's going to grow here. And you can see right below it, there's the osteoblast that are going to be chasing behind those cartilage cells. And I didn't mention in my drawing over there, but as you progress longer and longer with this bone, you don't need dead cartilage. So osteoclast, chondroclast come along, lysosomes destroy that opening and create a marrow cavity. So that is part of the job of cleaning up what you're doing when you're building. All right, so for fun here, you can see again, those plates still present, no longer present here, so bone growth is done. I did want to mention appositional growth at the very bottom of your page. This is something that happens throughout your entire lifetime. You can be 2 months, 2 years, 20, you can be 100 years old. No matter how old you are or how young you are, you have appositional growth occurring. This is not lengthening of the bone, this is making the bone grow wider. You can do activities like, you know, exercise, which puts stress on your bones. That will make your bones grow wider, as would things like, you know, a calcium-rich diet. So I do want to emphasize here that endochondral ossification that we just covered, that is the only way to lengthen your bones. That stops, say, around age 21 or so, but this process, appositional growth, is lifelong. Okay, so, you know, if you're a 70 or an 80-year-old who has weak bones, they may recommend weightlifting because it promotes appositional growth, makes those bones grow thicker and stronger. And I want to mention, you'll notice where this is taking place. It is on the periosteum, on the outside surface, where we actually start adding girth to those bones. And we don't actually cover intramembranous. I did want to mention that that is what takes place in your face. Facial bones are fused together using intramembranous. It's a different process altogether. We've got just a few minutes left. I'll get you a little bit into hormones on the next page. All right, top of page 69 there, we have a few hormones to discuss that contribute to the process of bone growth or bone remodeling. And number one at the top there is called parathyroid hormone. And if you want to go ahead and jot down numbers 2 and 3, number 2 is calcitonin. And number 3 is growth hormone. Okay, so let me introduce you to a little bit of Bio-211. This is endocrinology. Endocrinology is a discussion of the glands. In your neck, you may notice that you've got hyoid bones sitting way up high. You might be able to feel it up there. And if you come down a little bit, you feel your voice box, right? And right below your voice box, you have a butterfly-shaped gland called the thyroid gland. That gland is very important for metabolism, but it also regulates calcium. If you were to take it off, it's shaped like a bow tie. If you were to take it off and look at the back side of it, there's 4 to 6 little knots of tissue, and they're called the parathyroids. So that's why if they take out your thyroid gland, they got to make sure they leave behind parathyroids or you've got calcium troubles. So the name is easy to remember because parathyroid is around the thyroid gland, and the hormone it produces is called, well, the parathyroid hormone. So easy name to remember there. Comes from the gland it's named for. On your sheet, you'll notice that this hormone causes osteoclast to destroy bone and releases that calcium back into the bloodstream. So it's important because this hormone helps to maintain proper blood calcium levels. We haven't talked about it yet, but in order to have muscle contractions work properly and nerve impulses to travel through your body, you've got to have calcium present. And your body doesn't have time for you to have a milk craving or an ice cream craving. You've got to have calcium right now or you die. So that's why we store calcium in our bones, is because we can immediately release it into the bloodstream thanks to the activity of these parathyroid hormones. All right, so you'll notice here when blood calcium is low, that is the trigger or stimulus for the release of PTH. We can call it PTH for short. I should toss out at you a term. Low calcium levels are called hypocalcemia. You may want to jot that one down. Okay, so that is the trigger or stimulus for parathyroid hormone. Low blood calcium is called hypocalcemia. Go ahead and throw out a term, antagonist. What do antagonists do to each other?
Pester.
Pester, yeah. If you've got siblings, you probably antagonize each other, right? So antagonists are, in this case, hormones that work against each other. So if parathyroid hormone's job is to raise blood calcium, what is calcitonin's job?
Lower
it. Let me make a note here. Calcitonin is different from calcitriol. They look and spell similarly. They are different hormones. Okay, so number two's blank is calcitonin. Calcitonin is made by your thyroid gland. Your thyroid gland monitors calcium levels and releases it if you need to lower your blood calcium. And what happens is, if you are 5 or 25 years old, we can actually put that calcium around the outside of that bone. The periosteum is where we would deposit it. If you're growing from the periosteum, what type of growth is that? Is that endochondral or is that appositional growth? Appositional, yeah. So calcitonin is actually going to help deposit calcium to bones, makes bones grow stronger, and it promotes those osteoblasts, helping to deposit and get rid of that excess calcium from the bloodstream. All right, so if high calcium levels stimulate calcitonin's release, it's not called hypocalcemia. What's it called?
Hyper.
Hyper. Hormones are tough. They are something you're going to do in Bio 211. So what I'd like to do is actually start you with this again, just repeat all of this again on Tuesday. I'm going to finish up this chapter, so here's where we're headed. We're going to do page 69. We'll do page 71. I'll probably cover a bit of articulations. Do bring questions. We will have time to review on Tuesday of next week. Okay.